Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Responsible Luxury, the podcast where we bring together thought leaders, culture changers, creatives, founders, and CEOs shaping the future of luxury. I'm your host, Lauren Petrovic, and today we have an incredibly insightful conversation with Kat Wemeth, the Director of Jewelry and Metals at SCS Global Services. Kat comes from a multi-generational jewelry family and has spent her career immersed in the industry, from working with major diamond wholesalers to leading sustainability initiatives at some of the biggest names in fine jewelry. Now at SCS, she's at the forefront of sustainability certifications, auditing, and compliance, helping businesses meet the highest ethical standards. In this episode, we dive into the evolution of responsible sourcing, the rise of transparency in the supply chain, and the critical role third-party verification plays in ensuring authenticity in sustainability claims. We also discuss the future of ethical jewelry, how technology, traceability, and consumer awareness are shaping the jewelry industry like never before. If you've ever wondered how to identify truly responsible luxury brands, what sustainability certifications really mean, or where the industry is headed next, this episode is a must listen. So let's jump right in. Here we go. Hi, Kat. How are you?
I'm great, Lauren. How are you?
I am good. Excellent to see you.
Ew, I know it's been a while since we've spoken.
Last time you were in New York was for our Climate Week dinner. One of the reasons I wanted to invite you on the podcast was because you're someone who's been in the jewelry industry for so many years and behind the scenes for a lot of it. You worked for some big, amazing companies and now transition into this newer role, right? Where you are now with SCS. So, and
yes.
I also wanted you to share more about your journey into the space.
Sure.
Maybe share with us a little bit about your journey and inspiration coming into the industry.
Of course. I always try to think back and say, what was my beginning in the jewelry industry? There never was a beginning. It was always there.
Because your parents were in it, right?
My parents and my grandparents. And actually, my parents took over our family retail store from my grandparents when I was just a couple years old. So it was always this ingrained part of our life. I remember we used to, even after school, my brothers and I would walk to the jewelry store and we would be there just hanging out until like somebody had time to like run the kids home. But I used to stay all the time. I just loved being there. It was my favorite place in the world. We would help with clients, with my mom, wrap gifts, clean jewelry, and run errands. It was just part of our everyday life. As I got older, I used to tinker in the shop with my dad and my grandpa. As my dad sat at the bench, my grandpa was a watchmaker. My older brother to this day is a watchmaker. It was always part of our everyday lives. And to this day, it's still like the core of almost every family conversation, every holiday, you know, it's just always been part of our life.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing because for families like yours who have been so in it for now your third generation, it's not a weekday 9-to-5 job. It is really your life. For better or for worse, right?
It is. Even there was one point in my life where I thought, I'm not going to do this. I think it was always just expected of me. And so when I was in college, I was like, I'm going to go into medicine. I was not going to be in jewelry. I always went to all the buying shows. I used to wear my grandmother's badge at shows when I was not even 16. And my parents were headed to Vegas and I always went and did buying with my mom. And they're like, well, you're not going this year because you're not doing this. And it was like a real aha moment. Like it stung. And I was like, what do you mean? It changed the course of what happened over my life because I went back after that. I went to bench school and I wanted to understand construction, design, and gemology. After that moment, I never left ever again.
Wow. It was a moment. It was almost going to be taken away.
It was that clarity of like, you're going to lose it. And you're like, no, I don't want to. I love it too much to walk away. Yeah.
I love that. So when you started taking classes as bench jewelry and learning more about the gemology of gemstones, was that before or after you decided to drop medicine? Were you doing it on the
side? That was after. It was like, no, I'm going to really dive in head first. And there was a branch of Oklahoma State that used to have a jewelry technology program. And it was a 2-year degree, you actually sat at the bench and you learned construction and casting. And the gemology teacher, she had taught at GIA previously. So we had a really robust program of learning there. I spent 2 years doing that before moving to New York.
That's incredible. After you moved to New York, you started working for which company at the time?
I worked for Lazar Kaplan, who's, I don't believe, around any longer, but they were famously known for the Ideal Cut diamond. I spent about 5 or 6 years in diamond wholesale there. It was so interesting because it was the early 2000s. So you had the beginning of the Kimberly process.
Yeah.
And, you know, we cut stones and imported rust. So you saw that shift happen where product had to have import and export documentation.
Yeah.
We had yearly compliance and anti-money laundering training when we were there. And that was before it became a requirement of the Patriot Act around 2005, 2006. The previous president of the JVC, Cecilia Gardner, used to come and do our yearly trainings. So that compliance and regulations, I think all of that, I mean, started very early on for me because there were just regular parts of our job.
Yeah. So shifting a little bit more into your role now with SCS, which is you're heading the entire North America for sustainability. Is it the exact role?
So we have a program called Sustainably Rated Diamonds,
yeah,
which is, I manage that program with my team, but we also, I manage all of our jewelry and metal services. We audit for RJC, Responsible Minerals, RMI, and Fairmine Gold. We have a bunch of different certifications within the metal jewelry space, and I work with all of those. Those auditing teams all come under me.
And so thinking about your initial experience with, you know, this new era of, like, for example, like ethical metalsmiths and groups and organizations on that, was there ever a specific moment that you can remember where it really shifted your perspective? I mean, early on, you were already super integrated into KP and the compliance and all of these more ethical practices. But looking back on where you came from, was there ever a moment in time where you're like, aha, okay, this is what sustainability is, and this is what I believe I should be working on and helping build out?
I really don't think that I had like this pivotal aha moment. I think for me, it was this flow build, honestly, of all the years within the industry and seeing these things happen, like the beginning of the KP and the Dodd-Frank Act, which is about disclosure of conflict metals. And it really came into play when I was in merchandising at Helzberg, because it's a Berkshire Hathaway company. And so you have to report, any public company has to report on 3TG that they do, which is tin, tungsten, tantalum, and gold. So, you know, that affects all your jewelry products. And so, like, I think that all of these criteria that continue to happen, what makes you go, well, if I can know certain things about these materials, why can't I know about other materials? And why can't I know where my gemstone or diamond came from? And that questioning and effort of wanting to understand more, that due diligence, digging into the supply chain, and understanding your practices. I think it just took all of those years, and this opportunity at SCS became, now you're going to flip to the auditing side and the compliance side. And I found that fascinating because I'd done work in merchandising and sourcing where we had to meet those regulations. But now we actually got to turn around and look at the companies and say, okay, how do you meet those regulations? Show me what you're doing. What practices did you put in place to understand? And then it's grown over the years.
Yeah. And with SCS now, the main people you guys are looking at are the manufacturers, whether they're lab-grown diamond manufacturers, gold refineries, jewelry manufacturing houses, diamond dealers. And then you also have this new retailer program too, where you're certifying
Sustainably Rated Diamonds, which is the first time that sustainability goes down to the product level. A lot of environmental or sustainability certifications are at the company level.
Yeah.
And it's the company making a claim one way or the other about what they're being audited or certified for. But this goes down to the product itself. You just have this extra layer of the individual product manufacturing, yeah, that can be extended to the product in the form of a certificate, T to the end consumer. We work with retailers who want to be able to say, I know where my product came from, and here's the certificate of how it was produced and where it came from.
Last week, I was working with a client of mine, an engagement ring client. We were working with one of my lab-grown diamond suppliers who are also SCS certified. I'm sure you know them very well.
Oh, I'm sure I do.
And I was showing, the client was with his mother for, of course, seeking counsel.
We always have to bring mom along. Of course, that is a very important motherly job.
And I was showing him some of the difference, like some of the stones I had weren't SCS certified, some of them were SCS certified. I think it was a 2-page document, and I was able to say all of these were grown in Surat, India. It had this measure tool for, it was carbon neutrality, which I want to dig deeper into more with you, because I'm trying to explain to him, this company SCS is a third-party auditing company, and they go into their operations, they see how things are done, and then they have this calculation to come out with this impact score on there.
So when you go to the product level, when you're certifying, a company is required to do what we call a life cycle assessment. A life cycle assessment looks at not only the company's information, but all of that production information. So what goes into your production. And so in lab-grown diamonds, a lot of that is the electricity, but it's also their water usage, waste, and any ancillary materials that help grow that product. Yeah. All of that is calculated based on the amount of output they do. Then you can break it down to an individual product level. That has to be done on a yearly basis. What we see is companies are shifting to more renewable technologies for their energy sources. And so that really brings down that overall footprint that they as a company are responsible for. Right. But at the end of that calculation cycle, you have to offset any impacts that came out of all of your production so that those individual products can carry the claim of being, we're moving away, I think, a lot from the neutrality terms and saying like net zero carbon footprint. Neutrality has, maybe it's too vague. It doesn't give a lot of specifics into exactly what was measured and how it was achieved. Agreed. And so it just is so important in environmental claims to not be vague. The more specific, the more information provided, the better for the consumer in the long run as to what truly happened with that material or that product.
No, it's very fascinating because I think nowadays, especially, consumers' preferences are changing so much. We have new products on the market now that have never been mainstream, like lab-grown diamonds, right? You worked at Helzberg for many years. And after Helzberg,
yes,
you were with Brilliant Earth?
I was at Brilliant Earth for about 4 years as well.
So looking at the merchandising world, how have you seen consumer preferences and buying behaviors shift towards more sustainable and ethical jewelry demanded from the client?
I think we definitely see it, not even in just jewelry, but in all sorts of products and shopping behaviors in our lives, right? We see where you can be on Amazon and see a climate-friendly pledge on a something you're buying or a carbon neutral claim. I think it's just becoming more of our
day-to-day.
Our everyday life. When I was, both of those merchandising experiences, we saw, it was so fascinating because I remember being the buyer responsible for lab-grown diamonds going into stores at Helzberg and working with our chief merchant and our DVPs and saying, is this going to work? We don't know. It went out as a test. The acceptance, I think, just shocked everyone. It really resonated with the customer. This product that is the same. It is a diamond, but it's produced in a different way. Instead of being dug out of the ground, it's produced in a laboratory. And the customer didn't really care. Like it was this beautiful product that they could buy. It's a symbol, you know, diamonds have always been like this symbol of love. And there was this shift in, I guess, ideology almost, that like you didn't have to know where something came from. There is more control. It was just amazing to see the acceptance. Yeah. And Brilliant Earth was one of the first companies to really be behind lab-grown diamonds. And it was pretty revolutionary when they did it. You just saw that the customer, given the choice and information, it was always about choice and information. And that shift continues to happen where lab-grown is widely accepted. And I think that kind of surprised everyone.
Yeah. Looking at when we see major either online e-tailers or brands or brick and mortar retail jewelry shops, you have a lot of deep insights into auditing companies and knowing what works well for getting that stamp of sustainability. How can consumers spot and support those truly ethical jewelry brands?
It's always tricky. And I think what I have seen is it really comes to that top level claim that the company is making and how transparent they're being about what that is. Where's the evidence of what that is? Is that claim at the company level? And then what evidence is there to support that? They might put that they're an RJC certified member. Well, there's being a member, and then there's being certified for the standards that they have, like code of practices and chain of custody. Yeah. And so typically when a company advertises that, they're specific in which of those things that they are for. You know, I've been audited for code of practices, for chain of custody. We meet those requirements. So what is that evidence you're being provided as the consumer? And if it's on the product level, is there a certificate for that product? So that certificate that says my product is X, Y, and Z, right? It's sustainably rated on a scale of 1 to 100. And this is where this particular product lands and why it's there. It takes a fair amount of research from the consumer side. You do have to want to understand and care, but then who issues that certification and what standards is that company being held to? And I don't mean standards like we have a high ethical standard. Like typically a certification program is to a specific standard, an ISO standard, an RJC standard. In mining, you have an IRMA standard. The even sustainably rated diamonds, there is a diamond standard behind that certification. So that's a very specific set of requirements that's being audited by an independent third party. On the consumer side, you do have to do a little bit of research to understand and maybe not just accept the little badge that
face
says
value for what it is.
Face value. You're going to have to dig in. And if you care and if that matters to you, then we see people do that research.
Yeah. There are some.
I think that we have a consumer-facing website for sustainably rated diamonds, and consumers email us. They ask us questions, and it's great to see. And sometimes the level of understanding and detail really blows me away. It makes me really proud that people care that much and put that much effort into this product they're buying.
Yeah. So We touched on this before. I remember you mentioned on a call previously, you have these consumers reach out to you guys with tons of questions about other retailers and jewelry stores. And it surprises you because you mentioned, why don't you just ask your jewelry store? But what's nice is that you guys are able to go back to your clients, the stores themselves, and say, hey, these are the things that your clients are asking about.
Yes. And we always reach back out to the retail company and tell them these are the things being asked, because in my opinion, at that point, it's a training opportunity. Did they end up with a salesperson who didn't have enough information or was maybe new or unfamiliar? There's a lot that goes into sustainability. There's a lot to know about. And so that, to me, is a training opportunity for that retailer to continuously educate their staff. When they get asked these questions, they're not nervous. They don't shy away. They know how to answer them because as a company, they've done the work, but maybe didn't know how to explain it enough.
Yeah. For newer brands or more eco-conscious companies, what are some strategies or ways to communicate their sustainability goals for the next couple of years in a way that is not too information overload for consumers? But it's a way to lightly say, hey, we're out here, we're making these beautiful products, and we're also meeting our sustainability goals we set out to do.
I think where I've seen it be the most effective for companies is when it's ingrained into their overall story and mission, where it's not just like we're talking about it this one time. It's part of who we are as a brand and as a company.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to how much information you give the consumer, there is a balance. I think I've seen most companies who have a approach about this do have sections of their website that are hyperlinked to, where if a consumer really wants to go in depth and have that more information, it's there for them. So that openness and transparency is there. Right. But there's just enough in the Cliff Notes version to give the consumer accurate information. But there's also that really more in-depth piece is not hidden away. It's still there if they want to really dive in. Because we do see consumers who really want to understand.
So shifting a bit to more supply chain traceability and supply chain management with SCS Global Services, because I also wanted to mention for people listening, SCS Global Services is not just for the diamond and jewelry industry. You guys are touching so many different spaces. I know agriculture is one, a lot of the commodity spaces.
We actually started as a company about 40 years ago in food and ag. You know, food and ag and natural resources, where our company was founded. And so over the years, that ended up in natural products, natural resources, mining, and into jewelry. The jewelry and metal space is a small portion of what we do as an organization. We do a lot in forestry, biofuels, and all these different areas as well.
It's fascinating to me. So looking more, you know, going back to the jewelry industry, how does SCS Global Services support your companies that you partner with in verifying their responsible and ethical sourcing practices to be able to promote transparency to their customers?
Well, in a lot of industries, you'll have certifications that are regulatory, that are required by law, that you have to meet them. The jewelry industry is still completely voluntary. Mm-hmm. So companies who are coming to us and they want to be audited for a specific standard, it's a choice. Maybe their retailers are requiring it, but it's still their choice and their hard work that has to go into meeting all these requirements. Okay. And so as a company, we audit. There has to be a separation between consulting and auditing. We have two separate companies. We actually have several different companies. We have SCS Global Services, who audits. There's SCS Consulting, who companies can work with when they're in the beginning of that journey or they need assistance. How do we get to this space? And then you also have SCS Standards, who writes and develops standards. And then we also have our fourth and newest endeavor, which is our Global Heat Reduction Initiative, which is a registry where you can, you know, when you have to buy carbon credits or offsets, you can feel good about those projects matter. And their main focus is on global heat reduction.
Fascinating. When was the heat reduction launched?
Just this past Climate Week. It's a separate SCS company all under the same umbrella. But yes, our co-founder, Dan Rhodes, he was so passionate about the climate and climate change and heat reduction. And so that started in his honor with projects that really focus on reducing global warming.
That's amazing. I'll be able to link in the show notes your guys' website for people, and they could click the link to learn more also.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, Kat, looking forward more into the future of the industry, whether that's the immediate future, 5 years, 10 years down, what new technologies do you see reshaping our industry significantly?
I think traceability, transparency is going to continue to be more prevalent, and that is going to be the true large emerging technology that I see. There's a little bit of it right now, but I do believe it's going to become more front and center, a larger part of a sustainability story. Because we always say that you can't have sustainability without traceability, because you need to know where your products come from and how they were sourced or manufactured to understand their impacts. So I think that is going to be the largest technology we continue to see emerge.
Yeah, I totally agree. And in fact, it's exciting for me too, because working directly in the industry and seeing so much opportunity on the consumer side, you know, for consumer tech to be able to, yes, B2B traceability is super crucial. We need to figure that out first. But then I imagine a reality where consumers are falling more in love with their products because they're more deeply engaged and able to see like what amount of work it took to make this one engagement ring. And, you know, being able to connect and see maybe a miner who mined this ring. It's fascinating.
I think there's a lot of that. We see it in some gemstone already. You have a program like Moyo Gems, who actually gives you that story of the miner. So it's possible. And I feel like that's the largest thing I think that keeps driving me within the sustainability side. It is possible to have this level of detail.
Yeah.
It's work and it's hard work. But if the entire supply chain slowly comes around to this mindset of this information sharing and this transparency, yep. then it is possible to have this information on all sorts of components and products that make up our gorgeous final pieces, because it's such an emotional purchase for the consumer.
Yeah.
We sell a product that there's so much sentiment and emotion behind it. And then how much more would you care if you got to know all of that information? I think it's such an amazing opportunity that we have to be able to share that kind of thing with our customers.
I agree. I think having open source information leads to more collaboration for sure and more success and innovation. I know SCS also recently launched a new partnership with iTraceIt. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. We are so excited to be working with the iTraceIt team. Thinking about that piece of transparency and traceability, it started with diamonds, our diamond program, the sustainably rated diamonds program, where this comes in, because it is a traceability program. However, we need to be very honest with ourselves that our strength is in auditing and sustainability, not in technology and software development. And so for us, this partnership is an upgrade of our current traceability system and moving into their much more sophisticated technology. It's all blockchain. It writes to the blockchain. So that feel good transparency, getting all the way to the end consumer on our certificates, will be there. And we are launching with them this quarter. So it's right around the corner. We're very excited about it. And diamonds, we hope, is just our pilot of what could be expanded into other materials and other finished goods.
So exciting. When can we expect more updates from the demo? Maybe Q2? Q2?
Oh, yes. We're in the final development phases of integration, and hopefully we'll start testing with a couple of clients in the next week or two. We're hoping that all SES Global Services Diamond Program clients will be transitioning in early Q2 to the platform.
Very exciting.
Yes, exciting. And we're really thrilled to work with them.
So I wanted to ask you perhaps even more philosophical question, which is thinking about what drives you to continue pushing for more transformation and innovation within the jewelry industry? What drives Kat to show up every day and want to build or create and collaborate more?
I really think that it comes back to that passion and that love for jewelry and gemstones and the products, because that was always my life growing up. It's that sentiment and love behind what we do when it comes to that emotional purchase of jewelry. And so getting to have had a career that spans all these different areas of the industry, you know, you do start to say it is possible and we could know more. And seeing someone's face light up when they see their piece of jewelry, but then getting to really understand what's behind it, that's the real driver for me, wanting to help be that voice of change and know that it's possible, that continuous improvement forward as an industry.
I love that. It's like being able to be that source of light and education to help light the torch. This whole podcast show is about responsible luxury and shining a spotlight on people who are contributing to the larger ecosystem. So I wanted to ask you, Kat, what do you think of when you think of responsible luxury? How do you define responsible luxury in your own life?
So for me, the responsible part of luxury is that responsibility to the customer. when you think of what it means to be responsible, it's that openness, it's that sharing of information. If you're providing a luxury item, what goes into it? Where are my materials from? How did I acquire them? Yeah. And me giving you that information as the customer, to me, that's the responsible part. When you think about even in fashion, luxury brands, like the cornerstones of a lot of those brands are the craftsmanship, the quality of their products. Yeah. But where did those materials come from? And how are their workers treated? What is the health and safety? All of those things to me come together to define that responsible luxury piece.
Yeah. You know what's amazing is there was a course I took on LVMH, and it was one of the circuits was covering Fendi. And Fendi actually has a section on their website where you can go and download a spreadsheet to look at all of their suppliers and their address where they're located, which I think is like another level of transparency.
Absolutely.
Just from a commercial level, aren't you worried your competitors might, you know, be able to access some of your same people? But I think that's a really good example of what other brands could do, is just disclose who your dealers are, your suppliers.
Well, you even see that with our largest jewelry retail in the industry, Signet. If you've ever read one of their published sustainability reports, yeah, they list their top 40 suppliers in that report. That openness of, there's no fear that this is where my products come from. This is who we use and this is why. I think when you're being that transparent, it's because you have nothing to hide.
Like, yeah, you're proud of
you work with.
Yeah, I thought that was very cool. As someone like you who's third generation leading the jewelry industry, what are some lessons or principles that you want to leave with this next generation?
I would say that if I think about the transformation of what we've seen in the jewelry industry and this openness of sustainability and transparency, my one hope and dream is to keep going. There is so much more to be done, and to have those tough conversations, because they lead to collaboration and just continue to be open-minded. We're all connected, whether we think so or not. And I think just the way we see different pieces of our part of the industry, there could be another piece of the industry that's experiencing something the same way. So the more open conversation, open dialogue, you know, the better the collaboration and the more transparency we'll have. So it's keep going. I really hope that in another 30 years, we've got this amazingly transparent supply chain that gives people an even stronger reason to feel wonderful about the jewelry that they wear, or that emotion tied to their piece. It's so meaningful.
Absolutely. I love that. Are there any last remarks that you would wish to leave with the audience today?
I would say, ask the questions. If you have businesses, large or small, you have the right to ask the question. You might not always get the answer you're looking for, but you can make better informed decisions, not only as a consumer, but as a retailer, as a manufacturer, if you ask the questions. I hope there's that curiosity, that wanting to know and not being afraid to ask the questions to make better informed decisions.
Yes. Well, that is a perfect way to leave off today. Kat, where is the best place for people to find you after today's show if they wanted to reach out and have a chat, or maybe for potential partnership?
Oh, absolutely. So we have informational pages on the SDS Global Services website, or I can have you post my email address on the page and we can share that with everyone if they want to reach out, if they want to have a conversation, if they want to know more about our services. I'm always open to talking to everyone. And because, again, like I mentioned, those conversations, you want to have those. You want people to feel comfortable asking those questions.
Yeah. We want to bring more insights and continuing these conversations, because that's going to help us lead to more insights and drive more innovation.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Kat, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Lauren,
for having
me. It
was a pleasure to have you on today.
Yeah.
I look forward to sharing this one with everyone.
Oh, thank you so much, Lauren.
Take care. I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
That wraps up today's conversation with Kat Wimmuth on the future of transparency and sustainability in the fine jewelry industry. I think after exploring the critical role of third-party certifications and how to identify truly luxury brands, as well as the exciting evolving role of traceability in luxury, it really makes it clear that ethical luxury is no longer just an option, but it's the future of the industry. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to the Responsible Luxury podcast and leave us a review. It helps us bring more conversations like this to you. You can also follow us on social media for more insights into responsible luxury, sustainability, and the latest trends shaping the industry. To learn more about Kat Wimmuth and the work SCS Global Services is doing, check out the links in the show notes below. And as always, thank you for tuning in. See you next time.